Good morning and welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is the program where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And this week, we're going to be talking about deep brain stimulation. Jacqueline Christini is the director, Deep Brain Stimulation Program at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
So my first question is, how long have you been working with brains?
I have been involved in movement disorders for approximately 20 years, and deep brain stimulation almost the same amount of time.
Okay, so can we just start with that? I want to get into what the moving disorders are, but deep brain stimulation, the deep brain stimulation program, tell us about that.
Well, deep brain stimulation has been, it's a surgical procedure, surgical intervention to treat disorders like movement disorders such as Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, dystonia. Those are the three main diagnoses we treat here at JFK at Hackensack with deep brain stimulation. It's certainly not a new therapy. It's been around for over 30 years and probably over 150,000 implants have been performed worldwide. It's actually a therapy also known as neuromodulation. So the way the actual mechanics of it is that electrodes, once the patient is diagnosed, and we can get into that afterwards, but electrodes are implanted very deep in the brain. There are small burr holes made in the skull. Electrodes are implanted deep in the brain, actually modulating the motor center of the brain, the area of the brain that actually makes things, our body move, our voluntary movements, involuntary movements. It controls all of that. So we, through electrical stimulation, the electrodes are actually then connected under the skin. Nothing is visible. They are connected to what we like to call a brain pacemaker. It's very, very similar in size to a cardiac pacemaker, except that it's actually working with the brain, pacing the brain as opposed to the heart. And everyone is familiar with what a cardiac pacemaker is.
Right, right, okay.
So that's pretty much, that's the mechanics of it. And it's a very safe, it's a very effective procedure. What it actually does is deliver electrical impulses to just the specific areas of the brain to restore the circuits that are disrupted. It overcomes the abnormal activity in the region that's causing the movement disorder. And many people are really not familiar with precisely what a movement disorder is. What does a movement disorder mean?
Yeah, I want to get into that. This is, I knew this was going to be interesting, but it's already very interesting. And we'll get into like the electrodes maybe a little bit later on. But yeah, a movement disorder, that is what we're working with. This is cutting edge stuff. I know you said it's been around for 30 years, but movement disorder.
So what a movement disorder is, and I do many educational symposiums and seminars educating the community and raising awareness of the therapies that are actually available, because you would really be, you'd be very surprised as to how many people with a movement disorder are unaware of the advances that have been made, particularly in the past 5 or 6 years areas like deep brain stimulation and focused ultrasound to treat these things. Mm-hmm. So a movement disorder, and when I do a patient seminar, I have patients ask me, well, what is a movement disorder? I have Parkinson's disease. Well, that's precisely what it is.
Hmm.
So it's basically...
Is that all it is? Is that... Are there...
it's much more than that.
Okay, continue, please.
but it's a neurological syndrome, and in which there is either an excess of movement, so you're moving too much, or a paucity, mean not enough, of voluntary and automatic movements that have nothing to do with conditions such as weakness or spasticity. So excessive movements are called hyperkinesias, and unnatural or involuntary movements are called dyskinesias. So when you're diagnosing a patient for deep brain stimulation, it's for us anyway, it comes under the category of movement disorders, which is why we have such an incredible and really very, very experienced team of movement disorders here at JFK. There's automatic movement, there's voluntary movement, and just to kind of clarify that, automatic movements, they're learned motor behaviors, such as when you walk, when you speak, when you walk and you swing your arms. Voluntary movements are intentional. It's something that you plan, or triggered by a hot plate, you automatically withdraw your hand from. Those are voluntary movements. And then the involuntary movements are things like tics, tremor. So there's a whole host of movements, abnormal movements that come under movement disorders, and that is Parkinson's disease and essential tremor and dystonia are all come under movement disorders. Parkinson's disease particularly is falls under the category of slower movements as opposed to excessive movement.
Now, you mentioned the like ticking, and that seems like something that would be on the lesser serious range of the spectrum. Is that accurate?
Tics?
Yeah, as opposed to Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to know, is something as, I hate to call it simple, but something, well, we're talking about many things. As a tic, is that something that you would treat if that's the only issue that someone had?
Well, tics have been successfully treated with deep brain stimulation. We don't do it here. There are only certain centers that get certain exceptions to implant deep brain stimulation.
I see. Okay.
For tics, and it has been successful. And they're really doing so much research in advancing deep brain stimulation for many other disorders. The research is ongoing, and the explosion in technology in the past 5 years has really advanced neuromodulation, and there's now 3 different devices that that are available to the patient. You know, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, there was one company that made the device. So, you know, if there isn't any competition, there's nothing to drive the motivation to improve what you have. Why would you make a better mousetrap if you didn't need to?
If no one else was selling mousetraps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there are now 3 different systems, and each one of them, they all do basically the same thing. They send electrical stimulation to the area of the brain that controls movement. I deal with patients on a daily basis, and I try to speak in terminology that, you know, that they can relate to. Because, you know, everyone goes on the internet, and it's full of, yes, there is good information out there, but there's also a lot of missing. And they come in, and they are so overwhelmed, you know, with what they read on the internet and what Dr. Google says. So, you know, I try to speak to them in layman's terms, not use, medical terminology, and they can go home and do their own research, of course. But, you know, you might think of, before we get to deep brain stimulation, of course, we are dealing with multiple medications to treat these disorders.
And so if it can be treated by medication, we don't get into the the electrodes being...
No, not okay. true.
Not so, true, okay.
No, not true.
All right.
Let me go through that.
Okay.
Clarify that. So initially, if a patient comes in and they're diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, the first thing we do, of course, once we diagnose them, and the only form of Parkinsonism, which I think I need to clarify, because when people hear Parkinson's disease, they think Parkinson's disease, everybody has the same disease. There are many forms of Parkinsonism.
Mm-hmm.
The one that most people are familiar with is called idiopathic Parkinson's disease. That is the only form of Parkinson's disease that is considered an appropriate diagnosis for deep brain stimulation. And the reason for that is the patients respond to medication. So if the patient's symptoms are not responsive to what the medication is. It's been around since 1965, believe it or not, and nothing better has, we have nothing better at our disposal. We have many other alternatives, but the medication is called levodopa. And what levodopa is simply the precursor to dopamine. So why are people moving too slow? Why do they have all of these symptoms of Parkinson's disease? Simply because this neurotransmitter or this chemical in their brain called dopamine is no longer producing, they no longer have enough, they're losing it at a rate faster than normal. So as you lose more dopamine, your movements become slower, stiffer, you may develop a tremor. These are all symptoms of Parkinson's mm-hmm. disease. Now, the first thing we're going to do, of course, and 95% of the time it is a clinical diagnosis, patients are sent to a movement disorder because most of the time by their neurologist, general neurologist, or by a primary care physician. But once we diagnose them clinically, and clinically meaning they have to have at least 2 out of 3 of those symptoms, slowness, stiffness, tremor. Once we diagnose them, we will prescribe a medication, and they'll come back to see us a month later, and we will do another motor exam. If their symptoms have improved with what we gave them, which is basically dopamine,
mm-hmm.
that means we're putting the oil back into the motor, so the motor is running smoothly again.
That makes sense why they would slow down. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what happens, though, over time is symptoms progress because Parkinson's disease, like many of these disorders, is a neurodegenerative progressive disease. So it never gets any better. The symptoms will progress. And as they progress, we have to, of course, add more dopamine, add different medications, extend the life of the dopamine, et cetera. So this goes on for some time until the patients develop side effects or motor fluctuations, meaning, and I can explain that very simply because a lot of people don't even know what a motor fluctuation is. Why would you? Patients with Parkinson's disease eventually live in two worlds. They live in the off world and the on world. Now, the off world means that their medication has worn off. None of these medications work 24 hours. They're all pretty short acting. So the medication has worn off and their symptoms return.
Mm-hmm.
They take the medication and their symptoms are relieved, but they start developing side effects such as, it's called dyskinesia, which is just this really excessive movement. So we've gone from not moving fast enough or not moving at all to moving too much. You try to reach a happy medium medication-wise, but once you pass that threshold, you're certainly would be considering deep brain stimulation. And honestly, all the research and the literature that has been done advocates that you do it earlier. It used to be 10 years ago, the train of thought, the school of thought was, well, let's wait until the medications aren't working, and then they'll go for surgery. That's absolutely the wrong thing to do, because if the symptoms do not respond to the medication, they will not respond to stimulation.
Okay, so now I see, because I asked that earlier. I said if it responds to the medication, then you don't have to have surgery. You're like, no, if you don't respond to the medication, is what you're saying, then you're not going to respond to the surgery, which is what you just said.
Precisely.
This sounds like the movie Awakenings. Is there a lot of similarities there? Is this exactly what we're talking about?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I bring that movie up every time I do a talk with patients in the community. If you haven't seen the movie Awakening, I tell everyone, please go see that movie. Rent it. It's Robin Williams Robin Williams mm-hmm. and Robert De Niro.
Yes.
That was the beginning of dopamine.
And that's why it didn't work. Because as you were talking about this, I'm like, this is exactly what happened in the movie. And then, the drug that you mentioned, levodopa?
It's actually two drugs, carbidopa, levodopa. Levodopa is the one that's really doing the work.
But it was L-dopa in the movie.
Exactly. We call it L-dopa.
It's the same thing. De Niro's character, who was catatonic, they brought him out of it, but then he got violent, if I remember correctly. Is that still something that we're concerned about?
Yeah, that's a perfect example of what I was just talking about, motor fluctuations. So what happened with De Niro, and of course we've come a long way from that with medication, but what happened was, yes, he responded, and if you remember in that movie, the floor, when a lot of the patients got to the doorway, they got stuck. They couldn't walk any further in that big rec room they had there. And someone painted black squares. They made the floor like a checker pattern. And what that did, and we just still do that, still use that visual cue today, what that did was that broke a motor block. Visually, their eyes, they were looking at those black squares, and it was like them crossing over a line, stepping over a log.
Mm-hmm.
I tell patients, if you get stuck going through a doorway in your house, take some masking tape and put a couple of horizontal lines on the floor over the threshold, and when you go through the doorway, look down. It's a visual cue. We don't know why it works, but it does.
Why does that happen, though? Why do they get to a point where they... It makes me think of... now I'm going to another movie. I don't want to do that. Compulsive Disorder with Jack Nicholson, yes. When he can only step on certain spots. It's not like
yes,
that, right?
Yes. Well, he had OCD.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, but I'm glad you mentioned impulsive disorder. So there is definitely, again, that's a side effect, impulse control disorders. I did a whole lecture series on this. Impulse control disorders is a very real side effect of one of the classes of medication we use to treat Parkinson's disease. And it's a very serious side effect. Dyskinesia is just a lot of excessive movement. Yes, it's bothersome to the patient. But the other class of drugs that as particularly young patients, this is not a disorder that one drug, levodopa doesn't treat everything. It's not one drug, one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
We have, thank God, an array of medications in our wheelhouse. And the side effect from the other medication is called impulse control disorders, and it's particularly young men are prone to this. It's also personality-wise, but I have had patients come to me that were on this medication, and I kid you not, due to their impulse control disorder, they gambled. They gambled their home away, their savings. They lost their jobs. They lost their families. And no one ever stopped to question them. Or, you know, the patient's not going to come in and tell you, oh, by the way, I've been going to Atlantic City every mm-hmm. day and gambling.
Right. Is this with the medication or before the medication?
No, this is when that medication was added.
Oh, wow. So, okay, that's quite a side effect there.
Yes. I mean, it doesn't happen to everyone, mm-hmm. thank God. As long as you monitor the patient and, you know, ask them these specific questions about side effects, it doesn't happen to everyone. But when it does happen, it can be catastrophic. And as I said, particularly young men are it's more prevalent in young men than it is in the older patients. And people think of Parkinson's disease as a disorder of the elderly. I can tell you, I have many patients that are in their 40s, in their 50s. We've done DBS surgery on my youngest patient, 36.
Well, the person that everyone thinks of, and we're going back to Hollywood again, is Michael J. Fox. And he was rather mm-hmm. young when it was discovered that he had Parkinson's, right?
Yes, he was considered, anyone diagnosed or symptom, not even diagnosed, because many patients are not diagnosed for years after they have these symptoms. But any patient that has symptoms before the age of 40 is considered early onset or young onset. Now, they have a whole different set of life skills to deal with. I mean, they're working, they have families, they have jobs. Mm-hmm. It's not like someone 65 or 70 that
maybe retiring, right, and somebody could take care of them.
Yes. I mean, they have a whole different set of issues to deal with. So those are the patients we do like to get into surgery sooner rather than later. And once they're educated, and I mean properly educated, know the goods, the bad, the ugly. I have, you know, support groups, DBS support groups, and I invite patients that have had the surgery to sit with patients that are thinking about it, because what's going to be their best resource? It's going to be someone that's been through it. And the advances that have been made has made it so much safer. So after the patients get the electrodes and the battery, and that's done by the neurosurgeon.
And that's all within the brain?
The electrodes are in the brain. The battery is in the chest.
Oh, okay. Battery, ooh, okay.
You know where a cardiac pacemaker
right.
is placed? It's on the left side of the chest near the heart.
Okay.
Because it's regulating the heartbeat, where it's pacing the heart. So the deep brain stimulation battery is placed in the right side of the chest. And as I said, it looks very much like a cardiac pacemaker. Many patients come into the ER or go anywhere for a test, everyone confuses it with a cardiac pacemaker, and they're like, no, that's for my brain. And people have no idea what they're talking about. What do you mean for your brain?
right, I get it. So, Jacqueline, Christine, hey, we're out of time, but I would love to continue this on another show. Is there anything, can you do a quick 30-second wrap-up?
Yes. So we couldn't really get into the weeds with the technological advances in this, but I would love to at another time and tell you what the advantages are of all the three different devices.
Absolutely.
And I really, my takeaway message to anyone that is diagnosed with Parkinson's disease or essential tremor or a movement disorder, really go to get a movement disorder specialist and find out about deep brain stimulation if you are a candidate. We have a very strict protocol here. We have a criteria that must be met, because we will not send someone to surgery that is not an appropriate candidate for the surgery that we know will not have a good outcome.
Okay, to be continued. Jacqueline Christini, Director of the Deep Brain Stimulation Program at JFK University Medical Center. Thank you.
I thank you very much. Please feel free to reach out at any time. I love to educate.
For more information, go to jfkmc.org. For a podcast of this show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. I'm Joel Katz, and we'll talk to you next week.